welcome to the final event of this year's Ledbury Poetry Festival, to the big finale with the Versopolis poets. Tomica from Croatia, Michal from Poland, Lou from Brittany, as well as the UK Versopolis poets Sasha, Sandeep and Mererit. As always, I'd like to thank the Arts Council England for supporting the festival, and for this event, I'd also like to thank the European Union's Creative Europe programme for their funding of the Versopolis scheme. Versopolis promotes European poetry and the exchange between emerging authors and renowned literary organisations and festivals such as Ledbury Poetry Festival. Now, before I introduce the poets individually, let us welcome Glenn Storhawk as well, who, like every year, put a lot of work into these beautiful green booklets, which all of you hopefully were presented with. So, thank you to Glenn, and also thank you to the translators, who shouldn't not be mentioned, whose work allows us to read and enjoy the poetry, even in those languages we don't speak. And now I hand over for Glenn for a few comments on the Versopolis scheme. Welcome, Glenn.
Yet again, wonderful. Fourth year of these books, a different colour each year, as you might have noticed. Wonderfully full, considering the weather. I was thinking if there'd been a performance of a shamanic rain song yesterday, it would be packed today. But without that rain song, it's still pretty full. That's wonderful. So I've just been asked to say a few words about producing these. Katerina just asked me, how long does it take? Well, I said, that's entirely up to the poets and the editing process. It can take anything from 3 weeks to 2 months to sort out the editing, and it's very creative and good fun. This year, as all of you who've got the little pack of books will have noticed, sadly, Katerina Kalitko is not with us. She was very, very preoccupied with her mother's serious ill health, and it was a struggle for her even to negotiate with the production of the books. And she did think she might be able to come at the last moment, but then realized that she couldn't. So we miss her. But there was a wonderful translation duel this afternoon, working on one of her poems. So the poets have already been introduced, the Continentals, and were the British poets introduced? I can't remember. Yes, oh good. And we have, of course, got another candidate for a parallel text with Mererid. And I would have pushed for doing a parallel text Welsh and English, but the powers that be might not have agreed to it, but it would have been fun. So that's enough of that. It's a wonderful scheme, and need I say how important it is with certain political goings-on in this country? So I think it's absolutely vital and wonderful, and long may it continue. So, yeah. And I would like to say, of course, and long may our place in Europe continue, but we just had to keep fingers crossed with that one. So we're going to go straight into a little... Oh, do you want to introduce Lufa? Yeah.
Yeah. You can stay on stage if you want to. Okay.
Before you start, if anyone hasn't got numbers and wants to go to follow the poem and stream the meeting...
Well said, Neil.
You should distribute them to people. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so put up your hand if you haven't got a green booklet, and you'll be presented with one by our lovely steward, Anita. Thank you, Anita. So I'll introduce Lou now. Lou Raoul was born in 1964 in a bilingual French-Breton environment, which shaped her perception of life and her poetry, as you will see. Her writing wavers between narrative and poetic prose, and Why Are the Use of Characters delves into the issues of identity and otherness. She has published 10 books since 2010, for example, the award-winning collection Elles avec Elle. Lou Raoul gives public readings, takes part in literary encounters and writing residences, hosts writing and speaking workshops, and she also enjoys working in collaboration with musicians and visual artists. Bienvenue. Welcome, Lou. Thank you, everybody. Kvala lepa.
Merci, Dech. Et merci.
Then I ask Glenn for helping me.
It's okay.
There's going to be, as you can see from the two microphones, there's going to be the occasional duet in very sweet tones. Mahai. In her heart, in the April blue sun, firstly she keeps a few sentences, words one after the other, and while walking, she adds others to them, words, sentences, all one after the other. It's in her heart that she warms up in the April blue sun. And they note down by hand or on their keyboards. Otherwise, they forget them all, one after the other, or else forget in their brimming hearts, in their hearts a clutter. And you too, else, like them. And to order your days, you write lists, this and that in lists. Then you join her on the bench, sitting. It's so as to join her on the bench, sitting on the little skist bench in front of the house, which is a maisonette with holes in the roof. It's in her heart, quietly. And gradually the years, sentences, words do all that. 150 long, long songs, Guercio, in her heart, by heart, their melodies too, and without hesitation, standing, she singing a series around her many people. You watch her sing in your heart. You say her name, and it's Mahai. You join her in your heart that comes and goes, that comes and goes. You see that they pass by at 14 kph in their vehicles. You look away. You watch her in your heart. You say her name, and she's called Mahai, an April blue for everyone listening to her.
Vite, tout réagilo, un ébrel glace prof Mahai, profara Mahai, ya, profetese ganti.
Mahai offers, yes, she offers this. An April
bleu avril
for everyone
pour tous ceux
listening
qui l'écoutent.
To her.
Mahai. Dans son cœur, au soleil bleu avril, d'abord elle garde quelques phrases, des mots bout à bout, et en marchant, elle en rajoute d'autres, des mots, des phrases, tout bout à bout. C'est dans son cœur qu'elle réchauffe au soleil bleu avril. Et eux, ils notent, écrivent à la main ou avec des claviers. Sinon, ils oublient tout mis bout à bout. Oublient sinon, dans leur cœur tout plein, dans leur cœur un encombrement. Et toi aussi, Else, comme eux, et pour ordonner tes journées, t'écris des listes, ceci, cela, des listes. Puis tu rejoins celle qui se tient sur le banc, assise. C'est pour rejoindre celle qui se tient sur le banc, assise, sur le petit banc de schiste devant sa maison, qui est maisonnette et toit troué. C'est dans son cœur, tranquillement. Et peu à peu, les années, des phrases, des mots, ça fait tout ça, 150 longues chansons. Guerzio. Dans son cœur, par cœur, leurs mélodies aussi. Et sans hésiter, debout, elle chante une assemblée autour d'elle, beaucoup de monde. Tu la regardes chanter dans ton cœur, tu dis son nom et c'est Mahai. Tu la rejoins dans ton cœur, qui va et vient, qui va et vient. Tu vois qu'ils passent à 140 leur véhicule à eux, tu détournes la tête. Tu la regardes dans ton cœur, tu dis son nom et elle s'appelle Mahai. Un bleu avril pour tous ceux qui l'écoutent. Ya, vitudre agilo, unebrel gras, unebrel gras, prof Mahai, prof adra Mahai, ya, prof et vese ganti. Mahai offre, oui, elle offre ça, un bleu avril pour tous ceux qui l'écoutent. Merci.
Thank you, Lou. Now, Sasha Dugdale is a poet and translator. She has published 4 collections, most recently Joy, published by Carcanet in 2017, which was a Poetry Book Society choice and included the title poem, Joy, which won the Forward Prize for Best Single Poem. Sasha Dugdale's translations from Russian include Elena Schwartz's Bird Song on the Seabed, a PBS recommended translation, and a forthcoming edition of Maria Stepanova's poems. She is former editor of Modern Poetry and Translation. Welcome, Sasha.
Hello. Because this is so much about translation, I thought I would begin with a poem which is a translation, and it's a sort of translation of a text from Song of Songs. And it's a found poem. In effect, you'll recognise the line from Song of Songs. It's just all the various translations of those lines in English. A garden enclosed is my sister, a locked rock garden and a sealed spring. My sister is a garden that is locked. My sweetheart is a closed garden, a fountain closed off to all others. A garden enclosed is my sister, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. I've been trying to write, I'm going to read a poem that I haven't read out before, and I'm trying to write about an artist who I find quite difficult to write about. And this poem relates to an interview I had with a curator of this artist, and her feelings about the artist come into this poem, which is called An Interview with the Keeper. We spoke at length about the beast, how in the wild he would have been destroyed by predators, alternately might have starved, become susceptible to small infections, open wounds in his fine hide. Truly, the maker of this beast is a genius. He burnt so bright on the fields and in the valleys. If it is possible to say of a beast, he had imagination, he had vitality. Even in his cage, he is proud. There are no shortage of admirers. But, says his keeper, I can't help looking into the flaming depths. I look in, then away. I bring him food, but I can hardly bear to look him in the face. Behold him, then shrivel, shrivel, stretch, and weep. Look and look away. This is the pattern of my guardianship. I turn my pictures to the wall. I have no mirrors. I talk into the night about my Janus neck supporting 2 heads, 2 sets of eyes. My conjoined sensibilities, the heavy key of the cage. Sometimes, I continued, I feel that I am the beast and I am confined. Sometimes, I finished, I feel the sea spray of spittle on my neck as I shovel, and it is me spitting. I'd like to read a poem which was a commission, and it was a commission for a book about birds, seabirds. And I was given the bird, which is the kittiwake. And I had a great deal of fun writing this poem because there is, in fact, a colony of kittiwakes very close to where I live in Seaford, on Seaford Head. So I got to sort of sit there and spend some time with the kittiwakes. There are a couple of things you should know about this poem. The first is it was written around the time of the EU referendum, and I feel that inevitably that's crept into the poem. And the other thing that you need to know is it uses the word jizz. Jizz has two meanings, and the meaning in this poem is the ornithologist's meaning, which is all the kind of features of a bird taken together. I'm sure you know the other meaning. Kittiwake. Your jizz, little gull, is the traveller's jizz, the wanderer, who sees the black, flecked ocean, barren like the steppe, and drops to feel the cut of its rough coat, sail boat-like in the dizzying swell, and lift again, casual as the inhabitant of a planet poisonous to man. No doubt you might have hung around, but all the accommodation offered to you was the white tenement, blasted with guano, crumbling with the chalk sickness, the clamour of children from the playground in the yard, those wings tipped with ink, as if you had signed the dotted line with one, signed up to country and nation and place, then in an instant turned mid-air and dipped the other wing in the bottle to run your signature through. Not citizen, not patriot, not I. From now on, the expanse and the blackness will be my place. Amongst you, I will make no home, only a perch, as fishermen perched on the edge of a hostile continent. So the kittiwake will perch briefly, all the better to fear you, the inland, the citizen. And finally, I'm going to read a short part from Joy, the long poem I wrote about the wife of William Blake, Catherine Blake. And I'm sure some of you will have been at the reading of that poem last year by Linda Bassett, who read the whole thing here. But I'm going to read a part of it, not nearly as well as Linda read it. However, it's always a pleasure for me to read this poem. It's long enough that I can sort of get into it. I'll only read a short excerpt, though, today. So this poem takes place or is spoken by Catherine Blake after William Blake has died, and she's been left a widow. And she's been taken in by an artist friend of Blake's, and she's in the kitchen thinking to herself. The walls are wordless. There is a clock ticking. I have woken up from a dream of abundant colour and joy. I see his face, and he is a shepherd and a piper and a god. I see him bent by the grate, setting the fire, and he is a fallen demon. I see him listening to the wind and sorrowing. I see wrath and misery, fire and desolation, 1,000 fires in ancient London, and then the grass comes silent, silent with the hardest colour of all, the mirth colour, the corn colour, the summer night colour. 1,000 summer nights pass, and children weave their daisy chains and place them on the heads of fallen idols. He wept more tears than there were days, and never chained the door, lest, he said, we drive an angel from it. And every morning he dipped his brush in wrath and mildness, and out of him tumbled the biggest things of all. The rightest, all of them righter than the rightest calculation and truer than any compass. Yet where they were right and true, none could say. And how they were right and true, none could guess. But I knew. He was an eye, and the eye wept and frowned and smiled. The eye watched, the eye watered. The world was a mote in that eye, the mote was a world in that eye, and his brush was a blade, and his tears made a lake. How I ache, how I ache. Sole partner and sole part of all these joys, he read to me in the summer house where we sat, when Mr. Butts came knocking and found us naked, reading as we read every warm day. The poor man liked to tell that story to everyone as proof of the wildness of our life, though it never did seem wild to me, but consistent in all respects and full of holy sobriety, which looks to the untrained eye like wild joy. William stood then and made a deep bow to Satan, who had been watching, and said, "You are welcome to our garden, sir." Satan had a round, sad face like a water wheel and seemed tired and full of pity. He wore his rainbow snake around him, and when he saw we meant him no harm, he bowed and shriveled to a vapour. But Mr. Butts came in and ate some grapes. Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. Now, poet Michal Sobol was born in 1970. He lives in Sabierzów-Buchenski on the edge of the Neopolomice forest. And that was with an accent, forest. And he now works several times a week at the library in a monastery. He is a graduate of philosophy and the history of the church. He debuted in his 30s with the book Lamentations and subsequently published Actions and Moments in 2007 and Naturals in 2010. The interest of critics and readers alike increased along with the publication of the book Pulsars in 2013, for which the poet obtained the literary award of the town of Radom, and in 2014 was nominated for the Wisława Szymborska Poetry Award and the Gdynia Literary Award. Give a warm welcome to Michal.
Thank you. Hello. I will read some poems from my last book titled Shelters and from Cycle titled Shelters. I will read one poem in Polish language and next in English. Sklepy. To tam, gdzie nam się wydaje. Nóż, który właśnie zagłębiał się w blok smalcu, skrobie różową piętę ekspedientki. Motyl chwiejny i płochliwy, więcej w nim blasku niż koloru. Gdy poprosimy, uleci i zniknie w krwawym bloku szklistej marmolady. Tak też wygląda przyszłość handlu. Blok biały, lekko słony, i blok czerwony, niewyraźnie słodki. Pomiędzy śmiga nóż. The same poems in English. Shops. It's where we think it is. The knife that has just plunged into a block of lard will scrape the pink heel of the sales lady, a butterfly fragile and timorous, with more glitter than color. When we come to ask of, it will fly and vanish in a bloody block of glassy marmalade. And that's what the future of trade is like, a white block lightly salted, and a red block, faintly sweetened. In between swishes the knife. Restaurants. At restaurants, we become aware of what really matters, but has never found a place in any official report edited by employees of CERN and UNESCO. Over noodles and ravioli, over dumplings rather than lobster in vinaigrette sauce, we discourse on the limitations felt in the face of this excess of dishes and data of our stomachs and minds. Pass the cosmic mustard, otherwise I can't digest these billions of exoplanets. As they have discovered a new earth, let them discover mustard. Banks. Let's not pretend that anyone can simply get up and ask, what's this, and answer the word. The monetary system would not have appeared if not for the comforting thought that banks exist. It isn't out of the question that only concern about money now stops us from sailing away when this burning question is debated. One way or another, we feel safer ever since the famous gold was placed in bankers' graves in the Swiss Alps. The bank customer need not ask about it. Barracks. In the barracks, the feverish adornment of those long signs fully adorned is underway. Yves Saint Laurent, Calvin Klein, and Versace hardly pass as the pupils of those nameless tailors who make the clothes for soldiers. Self-propelled soldiers, shotguns, and mortars endeavor to undress them, but it's far from easy. Even the city watch and the marketplace in Ledbury have never seen richer collections on their hangers. The barracks is home to an army of models lovier than on all the catwalks in the world. Cemeteries. Whenever we need urgent confirmation that it's in fact possible to die, we visit cemeteries. These rare moments of stopping, we only remove the yellowed, red adorned with a Christmas bubble in the spring when catkins are in bloom, from year to year, last for several minutes longer. Digital music even comes in here from cars parked behind the wall, an anger prompted by the tasteless joke that the mind will live on, only the body won't, softens the sight of grave pits. But not always anymore. Thank you.
Thank you, Michal. And as a last one before we have a short interval, I would like to welcome Meredith Hopwood, who is the only woman to have won the three main prizes for poetry and prose in the East Deptford, is that right? Wales National Cultural Festival. Excuse my horrible pronunciations, by the way. I do my best. She has been Children Laureate for Wales and was awarded the Glyndŵr Prize for her contribution to literature. Her collection, Nes Draw, which means closer to further away, as I just learned, or just over there, won the poetry section of the Welsh Language Book of the Year Awards in 2016. She writes mainly in Welsh and has degrees in Spanish and German language and literature. Meredith has taught throughout her career and is now at the University of Wales, Trinity St David. She has collaborated with visual artists, composers and dancers and has taken part in national and international literature events. Welcome, Meredith.
Diolch yn fawr iawn. Dan yr hail hwn, bwriais wreiddyn yn y tir crin. Dan yr hail hwn, a dim ond ambell ddeigryn o wlith yn gusan bendith, mentrais i siglo dawns yn yr awel dwym. Dan yr hail hwn, tyfais yn sychedig, am gawod o law yn sŵn ar graciau'r tir distaw. A'r hail hwn yn cynnau canwyll fy llygad. Mae'n anodd gweld bod mwy na chroen a phridd yn llosgu. Under this sun, I struck root in the parched ground. Under this sun, with just the odd tear of dew to kiss a blessing, I managed to mimic a dance in the hot breeze. Under this sun, I grew thirsty for the blades of rain that would crack a sound on the silent land. And as this sun lights the candle of my eye, it's hard to see that more than skin and dust is burning. E equals MC squared. Ac os oes cae, mae agor. Ac os oes pell, mae agos, ac os oes cell, mae neuad fawr, ac os oes nos, mae toriad gwawr, ac os oes anobaith, mae gobaith, ac os oes ofn, mae dewrder, ac os oes craith, mae pwythau tyner, ac os oes diwedd taith, mae hefyd ddechrau, fel y mae eisiau gweld, os oes gweld eisiau. Living in a multilingual mind, one of the questions that I find people who live with one language always want to know is, what do you dream in? Well, my dreams and my hopes and my fears come to me almost always in Welsh. But each language you speak offers you a different window on the world around us. And in those two little bits, there was a problem. Longing in Welsh is hiraeth. And we'd say that means that you want to see someone, but that the seeing is wanting, if that makes sense. And the apple of the eye in Welsh is the candle of the eye. And I normally write in Welsh, but sometimes I venture in English, as I did at this time after reading a book about the First World War, being quite agitated by the 4 years we've had of commemoration, which sometimes slips to celebration, I'm afraid. And in this book, Charlotte Despard was quoted saying, I should like the word alien and foreign be banished from the language. We are all members of the same family. And in the same book, there was a description of the battlefield after one of the battles of the First World War, describing how the entrails of people and animals were thrown on the thorn bushes. And that reminded me of a poet from the 12th century, Cynddylan Brydydd Mawr, who said, Wedi cad coledd ar ddrain, which is precisely that. Almost 1,000 years and we still haven't learned. The wind that shakes the memory tree wakes me. It tears the flesh from the carcass of the mare that rides my night. and howling hurls it, skin and meat, to dress the wounded branches, furious fright, beside the entrails of my brother, my father, my sister, my mother, for there is no foreigner, no alien, no other. This is the mercy of memory. And then before me, bold, bright, dawn's first blade slits the day open. And unforgotten, the tree now sliced with light's clean knife shows me how it grieves for the leaves of life. I don't have any funny poems, but this feels a little bit funny today, actually. It's about winter and cold. And I was imagining how the sun's beams, like five fingers, crack open the cold and making the ice sound. It's a villanelle, and by the end you'll all be able to speak Welsh, I'm sure. Cliw glic, clic, clic, y bysedd rhawnd at gloi'r byllt, a'r hael o'i plaid yn codi clawr y byd. Cliw'r clic, 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 mae'r nos yn rhoi, daw'r pum peledrin gwani araf droi'r allwedd, nes chwalu cadwyni'r llawr. Cliw glic, clic, clic, y bysedd rhawnd at gloi'r ffenestri. Clic, 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 daw amser codi'r toi ac agor eto ddrysau'r ardd i sawr holl flodau'r byd. Cliw'r clic, 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 ac mae'r nos yn rhoi. Er gweitha'r ofn, mae'n gwthio'r haf, sdim modd o sgoi grym i gwthio fel geni babi'r byd. Ac fe ddaw'r dydd. Cliw'r clic, 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 mae'r nos yn rhoi, ac mae'r byllt i gyd yn chwal a'r meistri oer yn ffoi, ac mae bywyd, ac fe fydd bywyd, ac fe ddaw'r wawr. Cliw, glic, clic, clic, y bysedd rhawnd at gloi'r byd i gyd, clic, ac mae'r nos wedi rhoi. And one of the joys of being a Versopolis poet is that you get them translated into other languages. So this is a bit of that in German. Winter, fürchte dich nicht. Lass die Sonnen deinen tief gefrorenen Zorn berühren und die verwandelnden Energie freisetzen. Fürchte dich nicht vor den Stürmen, da die Ruhe kommen wird. Fürchte weder die Hitze der Trommel, die dein Herz rührt, noch die Hitze des Summens in deinem Kopf. Fear nothing. But the lulling ebb that grinds smooth the cool senses to conform. Your indifference. Do not be afraid of anything else, not even the moon, friend. Do not be afraid, for life is without end. Listen, soon it will be dawn. And then this was a poem for the other festival down the road in the Hay that wanted to celebrate Aris Thomas, his work, and we were asked to respond to a poem, and I chose Two Shirts on a Line. But my response was written the day after the Dhaka disaster, when children and young people were killed in order for us to buy cheap knickers. And that makes the whole operation of hanging clothes on the line something else, which for my grandmother was an art, believe you me. Datod, rhag fy nghywilydd, berwais y dillad man a'i gosod yn dwt ac yn lan ar y lein denau i ddawnsio'n dyner i gyfeiliant y dydd. To my shame, I boiled the smalls and put them neat and clean on the thin line to dance gently to the accompaniment of the day. In the squeak of the winch, if I heard a sigh, I did not pause, as I raised every undergarment and unfurled my pride flag high. And from the east there came nothing, except the fingers of the sun to touch each piece before the morning's dry kiss baked them crisp. I did not see the distant hands imploring, the hands that had stitched them together, nor the thread coming undone before disappearing quietly under rubble dust. I saw only white, proper bargains hanging for my shame. And to finish, I'd like to read a poem in English, but it's on Cynghanedd, which is our ancient meter. It's not a meter, it's a way of writing. Dylan Thomas borrowed it quite a bit. He didn't admit it, though. And Cynghanedd in Welsh is simply called harmony, but the English translation is the Welsh strict meters. And the Welsh word for poem is actually cerdd, which simply means song. I hope you can hear it a bit. When the shadow dies, how should we weep when the shadow dies, fading, slipping, till the sun lies asleep? Should we now leave, for the stars shed no light? Or shall we mourn by the shallow moon that has no dawn, no day? Say, shall we stay? And still, shall we grieve by the shallow grave of a flown away life like a fallen leaf? And if so, how? And when winter blows, might we rest by the empty tree? Shall we try? Should I? Nobody knows. But if to be alive is to belong, then we must keep still this song. Diolch yn fawr.
Now, Tomica Bašić was born in 1968 in Zagreb in Croatia. He's a poet, prose writer, graphic artist, and translator. He wrote 4 poetry collections, 2 books of prose, and a picture book for kids. He's also the translator and editor of 4 international poetry anthologies. He was twice awarded with national awards for poetry, and his poetry and prose pieces are translated into many languages. He's an editor for poetry and translation in Croatian Poezija magazine and founder of Druga Priča Design and Publishing. Druga Priča means and other stories, so that's the concept. He serves as General Secretary of the Croatian Pen Center and Vice President of Croatian Writers Society, as well as the Croatian Coordinator of the Lyric Line Network. Please welcome very impatient Tomica to the stage.
Well, thank you. It's thank you, Katarina. In the meantime, a lot of other things happened, but I will not go through it. I'm not anymore in the Poezija magazine because I'm now like working for Pen and Pen projects. But I want to say that I'm delighted to be here in Ledbury. Thank Ledbury Festival for inviting me, and thank you, Ledbury audience, in this tropical weather that you are here and to listen to our poetry. That's something that is very like started as an underground idea that was a police network, but it came out as a force, as a poetic force. That surpasses established roots in poetry that became a little bit more rusted, so we can read and listen and meet so many poets from other countries. So it's a grand idea. First, I will say a poem in Croatian, so it will be a short poem. In English, it would be an oar went into the water in a veil of black icy needles. It's a love poem. It's about something that we hold steady and forever internal, but in the times of the war or some tumult in society, we feel that we might lose it in a moment. So it is. It goes like this. Veslo je prošlo kroz vodu u kovitu crnih ledenih iglica. Ušao sam u sobu i našao te kako spavaš, tako nepomična da mi se učinilo kao da si mrtva. Da živimo i 200 godina uvijek bi ostalo stvari koje nismo stigli reći jedno drugome. Here in this wonderful chapbook that Glenn masterfully designed and edited, so I have to say he made my poems sound decent and proper in English language. Thank you, Glenn. There are poems that reach over to the 90s during the war in Croatia. So I will start. With a poem that addresses the July 10th of 1993, which was the third year of war in Croatia, and it was the time when it came already obvious that the country will remain freedom. But the political and military elite laid their greedy hands and diminished the hope for the better future. And that morning I led a reconnaissance unit into the woods, into the no man's land. And what follows is my report in a poem of the day that I was wounded. The wounded man is tempting God. I wandered around the forest of the enemy kingdom and stumbled upon the piece of wire hidden in the grass. It was a buried PROM tripwire, activated bounding anti-personnel mine. And in a split second before the explosion, I wanted God to make the cup pass me by. But when a detonation threw me into the air, I saw pieces of iron, pieces of my uniform, pieces of my flesh whirling in the orbit. Sand, stars, porcelain, four winds, tartan, razor's ice. Joseph Conrad proposing to Freya, the girl from the Seven Islands. My enemy's cats stealing the planet's oxygen, digging through the garbage. All lighthouses ablaze all the way from the New Hebrides to the Pepper Coast. The president of Zimbabwe, Karan Banana, listening to the German radio. Thousands of mummified fish heads prophesizing in alien tongues. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart making airplanes out of a piece of a newspaper. I never liked Mozart, and that's what threw me down on the ground. While the Vienna boys' choir sung. A jug goes to the water until it breaks. A jug goes to the water until it breaks. God, let that cup pass me by, I thought there in the ambulance. Let me live for a little bit longer, at least for another 100 years. I don't want to die now that our time has come. I wanted my medals to shine like oil platforms lighting up the night flights over the Atlantic, and my veteran's charisma to become electric. Let my limousine slide through the crowd like Moby Dick slid before the eyes of helpless Captain Ahab. I never said I didn't want to sell my soul. I was only negotiating the price. Let me be invited at the presidential party. There are so many dishes I have never tasted. There are so many people on this earth whose destiny I never took in my hands. I want to rob and preach to the robbed ones. I want to lie and laugh at the deceived ones. I want my place in the ark so I can watch the flood with the cocktail glass in my hands. Since it is better to set fires than to be burned, it is better to humiliate than to be humiliated. So let's lay all these cards on the table. We have but one life. Give me 100 cannibal whores from Borneo. Let me recover myself in the purifying fountains of youth. Give me power to last forever, like the invisible poison in the ways of all humans. Give me parts of their spines, hands, eyes, brains, hearts, kidneys. My hands are the hands of the sculptor, thirsty for work. I'll smile at you, the green pastures of Croatia, with the smile of a harvester. In front of the hospital alley, cats rummage through the garbage. They have conspired to steal the oxygen of the entire planet. The iron holders on the facade are empty. 50 years ago, three flags hung there, one for the gluttony, another one for greed, and the third one for the misery. Instead of them, we hoisted up our tricolor. The red is for the Christ's mineral blood, the blood of our dead, the guardian's subterranean blood boiling. The white is for the hope that we are fighting for a better civilization. And the blue one is for our blazing adventure, for friendship firm as those overseas telegraph cables that fishermen sometimes find when their nets get lost somewhere, really deep. But the cats came overnight and did their dirty trick. So the red stands for gluttony once again, the white for greed, and the blue for misery. So, dear friends, one thing is certain. Those very cats are the guardians of that other world as well. These cunning cats that sometimes transform into the politicians. The cats that are still rummaging through the garbage, conspiring to steal the oxygen of the entire planet. So, thank you. There is in Australia, like 200 years ago, they found a butterfly. Nobody knew where he came from, and they called him the monarch butterfly or the wanderer butterfly, because no one saw when he came. The wanderer butterfly. Beyond coral reefs, a deserted sea, where a light breeze and a bird in the sky announced the longed-for land of scuba diving harmony. It is where Vietnamese bamboo rafts cross the ocean in search of bread, and when they see a butterfly, they remember forever each of its pores, breading in spouting colors, because that means the land is near and they are not going to drown or die of thirst. There, beyond the seabed of petrified lava, lies Australia. In Croatia, as we became, we have a long history, Roman Empire and Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and we have been a part of Europe again, in the last 4 or 5 years, and that we are also the part of the Balkan route, and then we had, it seems that like the people, they forget that once, during 25 years ago, they were also the refugees. They were like these families who fled to other countries, and they were accepted, and there was like... we have police officers on the borders of Croatia and Serbia sending the refugees back to Serbia. And in November, there was a tragedy that they sent whole family of refugees during the night, in the cold night, to follow the train rail back towards the Serbia. And it is a family with children. One child, Masine Hoseini, died. On the rail, so like, and then these policemen, they forget that when they were children, many of them were also the refugees. So that's like we have this problem that we, not just Croatia, but many other countries in Europe. So we can ask ourselves, what does it mean to be an European now? Where it's like we dreamed of the Europe when we came to Europe, based on some. As artists, on humanistic role of the art and people towards each other. So, like this poem is called the postcolonial poem. The lions at Trafalgar Square in London, in Courtier, Montparnasse, and all over Paris. Lions at the tomb of King Richard in Rennes Cathedral. The Tiergarten Park and the Museum Island in Berlin. They guard the chain bridge in Budapest, the entrance to the Royal Palace of Brussels, slumber at the foot of the Columbus Monument in Barcelona. They dream at the Marquis Pombala Square in Lisbon. Long ago, their gaze of stone escorted the grand ships of East India Company out of port of Amsterdam. We have more of them here than in Africa and India. The capitals of the former European empires are not adorned with dolphins or birds, but with lions, whose strength is in their loneliness. One harsh winter, as a 12-year-old, I went ice skating in the park near our zoo. On the frozen lake, no one but me. Sliding under one of the bridges, I felt the presence of a lion. Through the snow-frosted trees, I could barely see the winter's den. But the lion's roar frightened me and made me return to where I started. But when it seems that they see you, you are wrong. Lions are actually looking straight through your bones, through the walls, bars, and the trees. Across the lake where I skated and all the way over the Roman Colosseum, towards the wilderness, carved deeply into their memory. Their gaze steadfastly rooted to the grasslands of Africa before the colonies. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Tomica. Sandeep Pama was born in Nottingham and raised in Southern California. She holds a PhD from University College London and an MA in creative writing from the University of East Anglia. Her books include two books of her own poetry published by Shearsman, The Marble Orchard and Eidolon, which, as I'm sure you all know, is the winner of the Ledbury Porter Prize for Best Second Collection. Her essays and reviews have appeared, for example, in The Guardian and the Los Angeles Review of Books. Sandeep is senior lecturer in English literature at the University of Liverpool, and she's a BBC New Generation thinker. Together with Sarah Howe, Sandeep also leads the Ledbury Emerging Poetry Critics Scheme, a program to encourage diversity in poetry reviewing culture. Welcome, Sandeep.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you to Ledbury Festival. Thank you to Versopolis. It's a very important initiative, certainly at this time. I'm going to read two poems from my first collection, actually. Some of you will have already heard from the second collection. And the first two poems really engage with the sort of story of emigration or migration from my family. And my grandparents were born in Pakistan, but is now Pakistan, and then went during partition to India. And then my parents were both born in India and then went to England gradually and then to Canada and then to the United States, and now I've come back. So these first two poems will mostly deal with that. The first poem is actually, it's supposed to be a guzzle, but it's not a very good one. It's a kind of failed guzzle, which seems appropriate given my lack of knowledge of guzzles. Against chaos. Love could not have sent you in the shroud of song to wield against death your hollow flute tuned to chaos. Whatever the ancients said, matter holds the world to its bargain of hard frost, but life soon forgets chaos. He who has not strode the full length of age has counted, then lost count of days that swallow like fever dark chaos. And you, strange company in the back seat of childhood, propped on the raft of memory like some god of chaos, you threaten to drown me, wind through palmed streets, oracle of grief. The vagrant dance of figures in chaos, carting trash over tarmac, stench of Popeye's chicken, the Capitol Records building, injecting light and chaos into the LA sky. That paper boat in rainwater, rushing, dives out of my reach, and old women give no order here to chaos, nor calm with their familiar tales. Your voice follows me into and out of the wrong houses, riding my heels in chaos, as if to say that every half-remembered element I've forged in glass is only the replicate dying shadow of love's chaos that once spoken is like a poison dropped in the mouth of song, turning it dolorous and black. I've eaten this chaos, its paroxysm of birth, and seen it uncoil from the faces of loved ones into sickness and distance and loss, chaos that hounds, that drums its fingers on the window like rain, who will not forget me and permit me to reach across 30 years for the child peering out over the very same landscape day after day. Yellowing day, that day of chaos, where you are still sounding your warning, though I was too young, to be left with the bitter heaviness of song, its chaos. So I moved to England 2002, so many years ago, and haven't managed to find my way back, but of course do go home to visit. And this is a poem that is sort of about that and engages with migration. It's called The Octagonal Tower, and it begins with an epigraph from the Canadian poet Anne Michaels, which is, "History is the love that enters us through death. Its discipline is grief." One. Whatever rage has come through these sealed doors and scalded us black and frayed, we have no name for. We cannot explain the quiet, sleepless shift of whispers, a procession of shrouds along our corridors, or the diverted eyes that cloud to see a row of winter oaks outside, shocked in their dendritic fizz. And if we do know it, it is in the blood, in this terrible synapse of sky, in the road away. From our house we drive down through a sunken valley where, like a crypt, it is forever the hour of the dead. You have always worn the wheel, pushed your hands and wrists through its axes as though it were a shackle, driven, hunched. It is the same, the sting of yucca and eucalyptus, a vein of pink bougainvillea purged in hot pulses off rooftops, a fragrant massacre. The same steady road you drive every time, afraid to speak, afraid to ask when I will leave you alone in that house with your wife. I translate your favorite song in my mind. This song of mine no one will sing. This song of mine that I sing myself will die tomorrow with me. An October night, 1975. A sudden rain has liquefied the earth. Mud isn't enough. There is a word you use that means more than mud. It is the sound of a foot sunken to the ankle, pulling itself out, the awful suck of uprooting. Like a scream, it is the fear of standing so long that you might stay and sink forever. This sound trails behind you and your brother as you walk the fields one last time. You will leave and not return for 10 years, to marry my mother, who you've not yet met. Your four bare feet make an agreement with the earth to remember. It prints its own response in your shadows. Two. Holidays are uncertain times. The marble face of an old king's grief deflects the spectacle of his queen's death in each perfect tessera. The Thaj rises above the Jamuna, doubles paradise in the mastery of slaves. Holidays are uncertain times. Their hands are cut off, arms thrown up in celebration. Now they too mourn and skyward pray to phantom limbs in the gardens of heaven, alone to pluck and preen. They are carted away without ceremony, along with the remains of stone that, like teeth, fall out of swooning heads. The funeral begins. Mumtaz, hollow as a bride, is veiled in by her white carved lid. No one knows when you were born. They think it was an autumn month. At 5, you asked where your mother was, your soot lashes pooled with fear. Gone to your grandmother's. Later, you found her picture, a woman propped up, freshly dead, her hands emptied of the past, and you seated on her lap, 2 years old, holding her and what held her forever in that exposure. 3. The road widens past tracts of arched houses. You drive faster and grip the wheel. I say I won't leave till after New Year, but by now it doesn't matter. Your knuckles are bloodless, and your stoic eyes are the calm surface of a timepiece. Shah Jahan, imprisoned in a tower by his son, was sent to Gold Platter the day of the coup, with the head of his chosen heir upon it. Seeing this, the old king fell, knocked the teeth out of his head. For 8 years, he watched the Thaj rise from his window, from across the river, and a diamond mounted in the wall that reflected it a million times over. The soft marble hands of his wife extended to him, to the empty casket beside her. When the river filled, he walked across it. When the door opens, only one of us leaves. I watch your car until it is far down through the shadows of trees. The road receives you, and the house receives you, as does the galley of water, the trimmed hedge, the cold, sterile cell. In your wallet, you carry a picture of my mother from before my birth, when she was only yours. Her pinks match the pinks of flowers. She bows her head into the branch and smiles, as beautiful as a queen. Love is incidental, time-bound. It is the memory of love we love. It is the memory that fattens on pain of these small deaths in these stone walls. The crown that is sunken from your ears and hangs around your neck is all that remains. I'm writing an essay for a poetry review at the moment on miscarriage, and I sort of have a poem about it, which sort of feels like notes, but I was really encouraged to read it, I think, by Marie Howe's amazing reading this morning when she said that it's important for women to talk about and to write about those things that perhaps don't enter into discourse. So the title of the poem is G1P0, which is the gynecological distinction for women who are pregnant but don't actually give birth. Yes. No face, no teeth, no eyes or balled up fists. To light the dark with a particular breathing. A black lamp beats its wings ashore to the rhythm of absence. A world gone quiet must be this fact, for which there is no precise language. The monitor goes off and you are led past a succession of mothers to a room marked empty. Taxonomies of grief elude the non-mother, the unmothered, the anything but this fact. In the dark, there is breathing. After 5 visits to the hospital, the bruising of inner elbows, stitching themselves to themselves in obsolescence, the nurses stop saying, sorry for your loss. I will come to miss those laminated hallways. I know my way there to the artifact of losing. Loosened from the factual world into a silence where there is no grave but your own self stumbling from floor to ceiling without an inch of your life, or mine, or this particular absence. The Lancastrian nurse is matter of fact. Her metaphors are agrarian, the language of slaughter. If you start bleeding like a stuck pig. Under those thick white fingers, an ancestry of collapsing valves and bleating transfigure into notes. You look familiar. Why have you come here again to my door with your metaphors of slaughter? A folder yellow, the word baby on its cover, refiled as miscellaneous. What grew in you is not you, but a shroud, and any idiot knows a shroud. A ghost who wakes you up 5 times a night, standing undecided between rooms, shivering in its thin shadow. Smell of blood and panic in the outriggers, carrying a child from this and that disease whose death is on your hands. I know my way here to the language of loss. My grandmother, who died giving birth, explains what makes carnelian so red. I assumed it was the iron in its veins that made the Romans stamp their profiles onto its brittle clots. Don't say that, I never visited you. A ghost is as good a family as you may get. Va, itni der bat tusi aihe. After all this time, you finally come. The child that clawed you towards death is my kin. His bones are a line pressed into the earth you never wanted to cross, transfigured on the back of a convoy somewhere else. It must be this fact, to travel so far from your country only to be burned on its soil. You look familiar. Blighted or to blight, what gives up, gives over, is absorbed back into itself, like a harp gone quiet imperceptibly in the night. The father has his title removed. This is like many other losses, a father, many stepfathers, a brother dissolving, absorbed, the apple tree repossessed in his childhood garden. Withdrawing. For every 2 steps you make, dear husband, I crumple like a sack emptied of its contents. The monitor goes off, and you are led to a succession of rooms marked pity. A world goes off, goes quiet. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandeep. In true Versopolis fashion, we are now inviting all the poets up again for one more poem to leave you with a plethora of languages. So I welcome Lou and Glenn back on stage.
Thank you. And this poem, you cannot find it in the Little Green Book. It exists in French. Yeah, it's a book for one poem only.
Bloodless, a woman will have put
une femme,
a bunch
mon ami,
of seasonal flowers
de saison
on the table
sur la table,
or on the edge
ou sur
of
le
the
rebord
window,
de la fenêtre,
and it
et
will
ce
be
sera
as clear
aussi clair
as
que
when
lorsque words won't be drowned in the brackish water of the old well. Words won't be burned in the metal barrel in the bottom of the allotment. Besides, a woman will never cross that gate.
A woman will have laid a bunch of seasonal flowers on the edge of the window, and if someone sniggers, she will make of these noises from throat and mouth a string to hang the flowers above the doorstep of the empty house. Words won't be drowned in the brackish water of the old well. Words won't be burnt in the metal barrel in the bottom of the allotment. Besides, a woman will never cross that gate. Rubble at her bruised feet. A woman won't be down on her knees. This rubble, too, she'll put into bunches. There will be many of them. And even if the whole empty house has to be filled, no matter, she'll have her time. Words won't be drowned in the brackish water of the old well. Words won't be burnt in the metal barrel in the bottom of the allotment. Besides, a woman will never cross that gate. Of these two birds with warm bodies, a woman will know what to do. Of these two birds, the bodies are warm. It seems, though, a woman will take them, and without waiting too long, take them far away. She will take them far away from her. Preferring to keep close the necessary words, not drowned in the brackish water of the old well, nor burnt in the metal barrel in the bottom of the allotment.
It will be as clear as a full moonlight night that a woman will still be waiting with her whole body.
It will be as clear as a voice saying, "May I hold your arm?" And then a hand laid on the woman's sleeve. It will be as clear as each day as it comes.
Snigger on the string, all right.
It will be as clear and much more than. A woman in the brackish water of the old well, or in the metallic barrel in the bottom of the allotment, will throw something else over than her eyes, these not to be drowned, nor to be burnt. A woman will carry herself along as a bundle in long strides, in places that she'll wash anew. All the water from all her tears for this is enough. And if this isn't far enough,
doubtlessly, unable to flee, in this woman will still not believe.
She won't promise. She won't promise to lay more bunches of flowers, nor here, nor elsewhere. And in the rubble, a woman will abandon the warm bodies of the two birds, soundless, though soundless, withered, and already dead for abandoning them.
Exong. Une femme aura mis un bouquet de fleurs de saison sur la table ou sur le rebord de la fenêtre, et ce sera aussi clair que lorsque les mots ne seront pas noyés dans l'eau saumâtre du vieux puits, les mots ne seront pas brûlés dans le bidon métallique au fond d'un jardin ouvrier. D'ailleurs, une femme n'en franchira jamais le portillon. Une femme aura posé un bouquet de fleurs de saison sur le rebord de la fenêtre. Et si quelqu'un ricane, elle fera de ces bruits de gorge, de bouche, une cordelette pour suspendre les fleurs sur le seuil de la maison, vide. Les mots ne seront pas noyés dans l'eau saumâtre du vieux puits. Les mots ne seront pas brûlés dans le bidon métallique au fond du jardin ouvrier. D'ailleurs, une femme n'en franchira jamais le portillon. Des gravats à ses pieds meurtris, une femme ne sera pas agenouillée. Les gravats, elle les mettra aussi en bouquet. Il y en aura plusieurs, et même si toute la maison vide à remplir, qu'importe, elle aura tout son temps. Les mots ne seront pas noyés dans l'eau saumâtre du vieux puits. Les mots ne seront pas brûlés dans le bidon métallique au fond du jardin ouvrier. D'ailleurs, une femme n'en franchira jamais le portillon. Des deux oiseaux au corps chaud, une femme saura quoi faire. Des deux oiseaux, les corps sont chauds. Il semble pourtant. Une femme les prendra, et sans trop tarder, les éloigner d'elle, elle les éloignera. Plutôt garder proches les mots nécessaires, pas noyés dans l'eau saumâtre du vieux puits, ni non plus brûlés dans le bidon métallique au fond du jardin ouvrier. Ce sera aussi clair qu'une nuit de pleine lune, qu'une femme attendra encore avec son corps entier. It will be as clear as full moonlight night that a woman will still be waiting with her whole body. Ce sera aussi clair qu'une voix disant « Je peux vous donner le bras ?» et une main alors posée sur la manche du vêtement d'une femme. Ce sera aussi clair que le jour, des ricanements à la cordelette. D'accord. Ce sera aussi clair et beaucoup plus que une femme dans l'eau saumâtre du vieux puits ou dans le bidon métallique au fond du jardin ouvrier jettera autre chose que ses yeux. Ceci, pas à noyer, pas à brûler non plus. Une femme s'emportera avec elle dans de grandes enjambées, dans des lieux qu'elle lavera. Toute l'eau de toutes ses larmes pour cela, c'est assez. Et si ce n'est pas assez loin, sans doute incapable de fuir, à cela, une femme n'y croira toujours pas. Elle ne promettra pas de déposer d'autres bouquets de fleurs, ni ici, ni ailleurs. Et dans les gravats, une femme abandonnera les corps chauds des deux oiseaux, muets, pourtant muets, fanés et déjà morts. À en faire l'abandon. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the invitation, and thank you for sticking it out. So this is called Havn y Glo. We're worried in Wales about losing our language, of course, but also the names of places. Got all sorts of rules to keep the houses as beautiful as they should be, windows, architecture. But the names, they disappear. They can be changed. And names hold such history. You'll know that your own Ledbury, the river Led, Led is the Celtic word, Llydan, meaning wide, Molvan, just over there, two elements of Celtic words, Moelvrin, the bald hill. Names are really rich. But then when I was out in Argentina not so long ago, with the Welsh settlement there, I realised that, yeah, we'd given those places names, places like Havn y Glo, the cleft of coal, Dyffryn yr Allorau, the valley of the altars, Dôl y Plu, the feather meadow. But there were surely names before then, before the 150 years ago when the Welsh went to Patagonia. There's a problem in translation because in Welsh we hear smells, so that's a bit odd. And we don't really have a word for green. Everything is blue. But so bear with. A dyma Havn y Glo, hollt finiog ar fyrhester, rhwng cadernid dyffryn yr allorau a meddalwch dôl y plu. Havn y Glo, rwy'n chwilio ar y mylon adnabod am stamp yr hedyn sy'n estyn i fysedd o'r oesoedd cyn yr oes o'r blaen. Havn y Glo, rwy'n gwrando am arogl y gwlyth neu chwiban y dihuno yn llunynau'r awr pan ddadweindio the ffidil las i ffen. Havn y Glo, with its cold light. Havn y Glo, a keen blade, a sword, a cove of secrets like an ever-existing memory. Havn y Glo, there's an older name than this, in embers somewhere, I suppose. But I cannot say. Havn y Glo, it takes my breath away. Diolch yn fawr iawn.
One poem, English title is Lungs, and Polish Płuca. It's poem with suspense, like in Hitchcock. Płuca. Od epoki chodzenia na rękach i mimowolnego wąchania powierzchni naszej matki planety, aż po głęboki sztach i napełnianie płuc wyciągami roślin, które na niej wyrosły, byłem, mój synu, przedstawicielem tego samego gatunku i ofiarą tego samego nałogu, co ty. Lecz jak jedna cienka kurtyna zasłania następną, poszywaną z ciężkiego żaglowego płótna, nie od rzeczy tu będzie zwrócić twoją uwagę na dalekosiężny plan i wskazać, dlaczego przy tobie paliłem. Kto raz poczuł dym, zrozumie, że wdycha powietrze, w zależności od wieku, w którym odejdzie, nawet kilkaset milionów razy. Nie wątpiłem, że wiarę w cuda i czary pozwalające zetrzeć z codzienności nieco kurzu banału i tak wpoi ci ksiądz oraz zabobonna babka. Mnie, którego w twoim dorosłym życiu nie będzie i którego głosu i tego, co mówił, pamięć nie przechowa, pozostaje działanie wprost na organ, w którym zgodnie z tradycją miała schronić się dusza. Więc, mój synu, jakkolwiek to zabrzmi, wiedząc, że zapomnisz o mnie, chciałem, byś zwrócił uwagę na te parę bilionów istnień, które specjalnie się z tym nie kryjąc, uprawiają podobny proceder co ty. Oddychaj razem z nimi.
This is lungs, translated by Jacek Spolny, yeah? Yes. Jacek Spolny. Lungs. From the era of walking on my hands and involuntary smelling of the surface of our mother planet, to a deep drag and filling of lungs with extractions from plants that had grown there, I was, my son, a representative of the same species and a victim of the same habit as you are, but, like one thin curtain conceals another, sewn together from heavy sailcloth, it seems appropriate here to draw your attention to a far-reaching plan and point out why I smoked in your presence. Whoever has smelt the smoke once, he'll understand. He inhales the air, depending on the age he goes, even several dozen, 100 million times. I had no doubt the belief in miracles and magic, which help to wipe some dust of the commonplace off the everyday, would be inculcated in you by the priest and your superstitious grandma. The only thing I, absent from your childhood, absent from your adulthood, whose voice and what it says the memory would not retain, could do, was act directly on the organ where, according to tradition, the soul would find its shelter. Thus, my son, however it sounds, knowing you would forgive me, I'm sorry, knowing you would forget me, I wanted you to pay attention to the several billion beings who, without hiding away in particular, engage in a practice similar to yours. Breathe together with them.
Hello again. So the poets always return on the scene. And I will just say in front that this poem, 27th day of the birth of my daughter Mara, she is now 19 years and she studies arts and she illustrated my newest poetry book, The Invisible Sea. So that's like, what is some kind of that joy that I have in poetry, that like it can still be a part of the our everyday life and our loves and everything. So I will read it in Croatian. Mari, 27. dan od tvojega rođenja. Svjetlost i sjena razdvajaju se. A do prije 27 dana bili su jedno. Tvoje crne kose oči sada traže rubove. Rođena u ovaj svijet sa ničime od opreme. Toliko si mala da ne poznaješ ni svoje ime. Želiš nas osvojiti tim osmijehom novostvorenoga neba. Kakav je to osmijeh, sve pčele Alpa i sve šumske vatre Mongolije i svih 350 crkvenih tornjeva Salvadora i svi planktoni Atlantika nalaze utočište u nebu tvoga osmijeha, iskovanoga na tajnom mjestu koje je poznato samo pojedinim levitirajućim svecima. Gledaš uokolo i svemu se čudiš, ali moram ti reći da u tvojim crnim očima starim 10.000 godina još uvijek mogu vidjeti odraz onog tihog jezera čija se dubina ne može izmjeriti. Meni je to tiho jezero nepoznato sjećanje. Znanstvenici ga zovu crnom rupom prostora, neki ga jednostavno zovu vrećom od ugljena. Religiozni ljudi, oni to jezero zovu duh. Na tom su tihom jezeru tvoje crne kose oči još donedavno bile dva indijanska kanua koja bezbrižno veslaju beskrajem svemira.
Thank you. Thank you.
The 27th day, tomorrow, on the 27th day of your birth. Light and shadow separating, and 27 days ago they were one. Your dark almond-shaped eyes are now looking for contours, born into this world with no gear of your own. You are so little, you don't even know your own name. You want to win us over with that smile of a newly built heaven. What a smile that is. All the alpine bees and all the forest fires of Mongolia, all the 350 church towers of Salvador and all the plankton of the Atlantic have found recluse in the heaven of your smile, forged in a secret place known only to a few levitating saints. You look around yourself in wonder, but I have to tell you that in your 10,000-year-old dark eyes, I can still see the reflection of that calm lake whose depth is immeasurable. For me, that lake is like an unknown memory. Scientists call it the black hole of space. Some simply call it a sack of coal, while the religious call it the spirit. Your eyes, until recently, were like two Indian canoes, rowing lightheartedly through the endless universe.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandeep. Thank you.
And saying thank you is all I want to do again. So let's have another round of applause for our fabulous Vazopoulos poets.